So our next speaker is George McKibben. This is kind of part two, started by Dr. Larrabee, A Church Guide to Working with Planetary Boundaries.
Thank you very much. By way of introduction, I work as a municipal planner, advising communities and local businesses and the like as to how they should develop their lands going forward in the future. I'm a member of the American Institute of Certified Planners, so I'm licensed in the States, but I'm also a Canadian. I'm a registered professional planner within the province of Ontario and a member of the Canadian Institute of Planners. And on both sides of the border, I've been involved in a profession in a variety of different capacities over, I'm afraid, the last 50 years. So my focus is on local communities, not state and provinces and federal administrations. Thank you for the opportunity to make this presentation to you today. Local churches play important roles in our communities because their membership is local, and we hope representative of the community's wide range of income, education, and preconceived ideas about environmental concerns. We in the Creation Care Affiliation are developing a guide to help local congregations address the planetary boundaries issues that David has just described to you. This has been an exciting journey. In 2023, I gave a paper on Angus Hill's theological and landscape contributions to local communities in Canada and Europe. In the spring of 2024, David and I, with others, helped ASA form the Creation Care Affiliation. At the 2024 ASA conference, I offered creation care principles for consideration by all, the most important of which is humility. We need lots of that. In January of this year, we hosted Catherine Richardson's online presentation David has just described. In this presentation, we present the basic structure a faith community guidance response needs to address. As challenging as the planetary boundary science and technology is, our response has to be both comprehensive and faith-based, both and. Our starting point is we cannot address boundaries without also addressing how we address God's creation and where we fit into creation as the salt of the earth. We are embedded in creation. Further, we don't own creation or have a right to destroy it. How do we work with these planetary boundaries that David has described? I take the boundary presentation that David just made and set out assumptions about how we approach these boundaries. First, the boundaries are not independent silos. They interact together. So what we do to address species diversity or forest cover will have collateral effects, positive and negative, on other boundaries. Our actions need to consider all. To the extent we understand these collateral effects, some of which are not necessarily fully predictable. For example, the American Planning Association's 2025 trend report for planners observed that forests purchased as carbon offsets have been often lost entirely due to wildfire or development. Climate warming acts as an effects driver, making it difficult to achieve stability in several of the other boundaries, such as biosphere integrity and the land system change, and for the remainder, complicates matters. For example, atmospheric aerosol loading. Warming will drive more change more quickly, And throughout this all, we are learning continually. Fortunately, there are information sources available to us which we can use. And later, I'll describe to you a couple of those sources. But denial can take many forms, not just the denial of science, but the notion that with a few technological changes, our response is complete. For example, the notion that we put a solar panel on our church or on our buildings, that that's all we need to do. We need to do much more. Last evening, it was described the question about consumption of beef, a concern we don't want to hear too often, but one we need to consider as well. At the moment, government and institutional support is sporadic. In fact, in Canada, our governments are either working at cross purposes or in denial. But at some point, that's going to change. In fact, institutional changes are underway. For example, escalating home insurance costs associated with pricing climate risk. At the moment, we need local support and guidance. And this presentation is intended to help us frame what that support looks like. This is an excerpt from Psalm 148. I'm going to put the proposition to you that it describes a liminal space that we as readers have not fully entered. Let's just take a moment to read it. He established them forever and ever. He fixed their bounds, which cannot be passed. Think of David's presentation when you think of bounds and put the two together. Praise the Lord and all the earth, you sea monsters and all deeps. Fire and hail, snow and frost, stormy wind fulfilling his command. Mountains and all hills, fruit trees and all cedars. Wild animals and all cattle, creeping things and flying birds. A liminal space is a tipping point, but with some significant differences. There is a clear understanding of what is being left behind and a new understanding of what is being entered. These spaces are experienced as eerie, disconcerting, and nonlinear. As we experience a warming world, we begin to cope with the unfolding changes that are materializing presently and begin to formulate a response. Psalm 148 demonstrates God relates to creation independent of any relationship to humanity. This isn't an isolated example. For example, see Psalm 104 or Job 38 to chapter 39. Creation praises God directly and has standing before the Creator. Our challenge this morning is to imagine how we might open ourselves to experience creation as God experiences creation and creation's praise. How do we become the salt of the earth going forward? Furthermore, the ways in which God fixed the boundaries of earth's processes is expanded upon in an early Christian hymn, Colossians chapter 1, verse 17, in him, Christ, all things hold together. That is, while heaven and earth processes are fixed by God, internally, Christ holds creation together. Psalm 148 describes a liminal space we are entering. We don't have the words that properly describes that experience. The psalmists and current scholars like Martha Nussbaum extend notions of human consciousness to describe what is happening, but the psalm describes much more than that. Better and new words will emerge as we address planetary boundaries. Here are some words that begin to help address the changes taking place. A tipping point is a point at which the buildup of minor incidents reaches an unbearable level, causing something to act in a way they had previously resisted. An example of a tipping point is the heating of the Canadian Arctic and the release of methane and other greenhouse gases from the permafrost. Once that begins, there may be no stopping the release. A hydroclimate whiplash, and keep in mind that that concept itself is a new concept. 10 years ago, I doubt we would have heard that word at all. A hydroclimate whiplash refers to sudden, large, and or frequent transitions between very dry and very wet conditions. Hydroclimate volatility is anticipated to evolve with anthropogenic warming. Further increases are anticipated with ongoing warming. An example of hydroclimate whiplash is the ways in which fighting forest fires has had to change to address the severity of the events. Another related effect is air quality impacts caused by drifting wildfire smoke across the continent. How do we act? As we transition, what are the personal characteristics Christ followers aspire to that will enable us to address our milieu as followers of Jesus? Here are characteristics from Matthew's recounting of the Beatitudes that help describe what our approach might look like. I give you another commandment, that you love one another. And the Beatitudes, blessed are the poor in spirit, those who mourn, are meek, who hunger and thirst for righteousness, who are merciful, poor in heart, and the peacemakers. We need to be especially aware of those who will be disadvantaged by the unfolding changes David has described. One approach to addressing boundaries is scenario development. Create a storyline using the available science and technology to paint a picture of the future we will experience, particularly where we consider business as usual. Use that future scenario as a future we want to avoid or adapt to and or mitigate. And two scenarios are described in the following slides, and these demonstrate why business as usual isn't viable if we are to love humanity and act consistently with Matthew's Beatitudes. Further, risk management in isolation is insufficient. APA's, the American Planning Association's Planning and Law Division, reported a Texas State Supreme Court decision recently that highlights risk management's limitations. The city of Houston adopted a regulatory requirement for new development to be 2 feet above the 500-year floodplain design storm, FEMA's design standard for flood insurance, for its flood insurance program. A local development asserted the ordinance was a regulatory taking, expropriation without compensation. After different decisions by the trial judge and an appeals court, the state Supreme Court agreed the development can assert a valid regulatory takings claim and remanded the case to the trial court for further proceedings. Hurricane Harvey created a physical climate risk that needs to be addressed in the public interest. The planned unit development approvals began before the city's floodplain ordinance was enacted and may have been before FEMA developed its standards for floodplain insurance. Any ordinance that attempts to properly address the risk is both a regulatory risk and a transitional risk. A regulatory risk, can you meet the standard? Can you design something that will withstand the climate risk that is posed? Whenever these changes are made, one has to ask whether existing and new uses can address the climate warming risks and the demands associated with increased risks. As it happens, the court decided the ordinance was a taking in favor of the development proponents. But homeowners seek to purchase properties that are not at flooding risk. Indeed, their mortgage requirements may require no flooding risk. If the development proceeds without insurance and at substantial risk of future flooding, it is a strong candidate for becoming a stranded asset. One way to avoid a scenario like this is to develop scenarios of the future that take climate warming and other planetary boundaries into account, and then we can work back to actions we need to take to mitigate and adapt to that future. In the future of the human climate niche, a group of international researchers postulated over time, humanity has resided generally within a climate niche between 11 and 15 degrees centigrade mean annual temperature. Further, they consider how the area affected by the mean annual temperature in excess of 29 degrees centigrade expands if we maintain business as usual 2070. That's the area that you see in dark in the Sahara Desert in Africa. And that's an area that humans are not capable to exist without substantial technological assistance. Only areas of the Sahara Desert presently exhibit mean annual temperatures in excess of 29 degrees centigrade. Fast forward to 2070, the hatched areas in South and Central America and Africa, Asia and the Philippines and Australia represent the lands projected to experience mean annual temperatures in excess of 29 degrees centigrade. Assuming normal population projections and taking place, about 3.5 million billion people of the projected population, potentially climate refugees, would have to move to other areas if the global population were to stay the same way as it has to date with respect to that 29 degrees. That creates the potential for climate refugees. Climate refugees are being addressed in some areas of the world today. For example, Australia has introduced an immigration policy whereby residents of Tuvalu, an island in the South Pacific, which will be gradually swamped with water, can immigrate to Australia. Similarly, New Zealand is doing the same. Look at this diagram, and as you do, try to place yourself in it. First Street has created a neighborhood growth categories impacted by the severity of environmental risk. Risk industry responses, read insurance, both public and private, and mobility, projections that take into account these factors, in this case from 2025 through 2055, lead to alternative scenarios for insurance charges and population growth and derivative effects on home values and local economies. Each dot represents a census unit. The map displays five categories: climate abandonment, potentially 25% of the census units tracked; risky growth, another 31%, tipping point communities, 27, economic decline, 11, and those communities that are resilient, 5%. We live in a world where business as usual prevails. The planning and design words we use would be ones, select goals first and set objectives upon which we would measure progress to goal achievement. Information gathering begins following that, and then synthesis and implementation. Those are the words that municipal planners use most often. In a world where planetary boundaries apply, different words are needed: resist, avoid, that is not development areas, accommodate, communicate, and reconnect. We need to decide which emerging boundary conditions we can live within and what adaptive measures we need to apply. Then we need to decide which boundary conditions we cannot live within and avoid. Substantial mitigation may be necessary. Where the boundary conditions can be accommodated within our communities, we need to develop landscape approaches that allow that accommodation. Throughout all, we need to communicate with our congregations, local institutions, businesses, state, provincial, and federal government officials and institutions. Lastly, we need to develop worshipful practices that enable us to reconnect with a living creation. Thank you.
Yes. So in my youth, there was a word that was used a lot by leaders within the church and political leaders that I don't see up there and I haven't heard it in a long time, and that's the word sacrifice. Are we going to have to sacrifice something like our consumerism to make this a livable planet?
Thank you for your question. I was tempted at the outset to say that I've also taken in comments from various people at the last couple of conferences to inform what I was doing. And I think of John Elwood's comments about we're approaching collapse. So sacrifice with business as usual, we are approaching collapse. So we're going to have to give up something, some things. I think in the discussions we had with Jessica Moorman and her colleagues yesterday morning, I think one thing we didn't talk about is when it comes to agriculture, we may not be eating as much beef going forward as we are today. Imagine that. And think about the kind of sacrifice that a lot of us would think that would be to less, eat less, and you eat different sorts of food stuff. So that's an example. The also, you know, if you're thinking about moving from one area to another, getting out of areas where we can't manage the risk, that involves substantial sacrifice for some people and the need to share the cost of that sacrifice across the board.
I like to comment on another parameter that I think everybody can understand. It's called the collapse, predicted collapse in the world food supply. This was originally predicted in the book Limits to Growth, published in the 1970s, and the update is that it's going to occur in about 10 years, 2035, and that's going to be for the heat problem that you aptly pointed out. But one of the co-authors of that report was, oh, there'll always be enough food for those who can pay. Do you care to comment on that?
I think the climate equity issue is substantial, and I know myself in my own community, I've done work with local growers, food producers, and the food bank to try to deal with that thing. Innovation and work in that area is going to be much more required going forward. Thank you.
I was wondering about, addressing planetary boundaries, but I was also thinking about issues that are going to that could come into play in addressing those boundaries as to what the priorities of people who are living in a particular area are. So for instance, there's one writer that I've read a bit of, Paul Kingsnorth, and one of the things he talks about all the time is how much he loves nature and how much he's involved with the aesthetics aspect of nature and how much, say, putting a windmill on top of every mountain detracts from that aesthetic aspect. And I was just wondering, how do we balance different priorities that people might have and still engage these planetary boundaries?
From my municipal planning experience, primarily in Ontario, I think the standard of decision making isn't necessarily the best science. It involves judgment as to how to balance out all those competing issues to produce a reasonable solution. A reasonable solution in the situation that you described might involve simply building that structure, or If it's a particularly scenic area, it might not involve that. Those are decisions that and trade-offs that had to be made, preferably at the local level by the community most affected by it. That's the best answer I can give you to that.
Any other questions?
Hi, thank you, George. Could you give us a few examples of what you mean by worship mechanisms that tie into it?
The Lures sisters have produced a couple of publications on Church of the Wild that give some introduction to how to reconnect with nature in a worshipful, Christ-centered approach. In addition, David has initiated discussions with the theological group within ASA to begin to consider a Bible study or a book study that would begin to explore that. So stay tuned, that may be coming.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.